Hello, and thank you for joining Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino, and Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, "We know who we are, but not who we will be." I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is not a better or more beautiful example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Very quick, very basic science lesson of how that works. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and just when it must think that its life is over, it reforms into the butterfly. But it's not finished struggling yet. It still has to build up the wing strength that it needs to take it everywhere before it's able to get out of that cocoon. None of that can be easy, but neither is busting through limits that society places upon people. Before I bring on my guest today, I just want to remind you of the back office kinds of things. So please make sure that you are liking and subscribing to this channel. Hit that little bell for the notification button so you don't miss any episodes. All my guests have amazing stories or amazing products to share. And if you are watching live, give us a hashtag live and where you're watching from in the chat. And if you're watching in the replay, give us a hashtag replay and where you watched it from in the chat. And also, if you have questions that myself or my guest today can address or comments that you want us to address, also put those in the chat, whether live or in the replay. And I will make sure if it's something that Hannah needs to address, I will make sure she sees them. If it's something I need to address, I will be sure to answer you. And so I think I've covered everything. So I'm going to bring on my guest today, Hannah Broido from Axiom Learning. And I'm very excited for what Hannah has to share. I know I say that a lot, but I get really excited about my guests and what they have. But this one, what we're going to talk about today is very, very prevalent right now in society. It's kind of the buzzwords. And I haven't said what they are yet. So you're just going to have to hang on for another minute or two to figure out. So Hannah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's lovely to be here and excited to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, I'm excited to have her here. Hannah and I met a few months ago at a special education conference, and her company gave a little demonstration of what they can do and what they are doing. And I was just blown away. We are going to talk about executive functioning. And that is such a hot topic right now. And I'm going to let her explain what executive functioning is. And but we're going to get to that in just a second. I want her to introduce herself first. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Hannah?
Sure. So my name is Hannah Broido. Like Shelley said, I work for Axiom Learning. So Axiom Learning has been around for about 10, 15 years. We started originally as Learning Labs, where we worked directly with families and students one-on-one to support them with underlying skills that they were struggling in. So those would be executive functioning skills, but also even more foundational skills, such as cognitive processing and sensory motor skills. You know, what we were really able to do from that was that we were able to say, these are the types of ways that we can actually teach executive functioning skills. This is what is actually effective for students of different profiles. And we were able to take that and turn that into different curricula and different assessments. You know, ultimately, the mission is to impact as many students as possible to really transform that delivery of education. And so for the past few years, we've really transformed into becoming a business that's a lot more focused on working with schools and districts. So we provide assessments to districts, we provide curricula to districts, as well as professional learning, really focused on executive functioning, but also just more generally, what do students need to be, you know, ready to learn? What kinds of tools do they need? And what are those underlying skills that are really then going to impact academic success? So I've been with Axiom Learning for about 10 years now. You know, and came from really a cognitive science background and teaching background. So excited to be here.
Yeah, that is so cool. And I love the brain and how the brain works. And I like learning about all of that sort of stuff. And it seems like in education today, like I said, executive functioning is such a hot topic. Even though executive functioning, the words have been around for 15, 20 years, it's really just been in the last 5 to 8 years that there's been this kind of explosion of what is this? And oh my gosh, this is so important to everything that everybody does at any given moment in their life. And it's often correlated with kids with autism. It's often correlated with kids and adults, people with ADHD. And a lot of the skills that are covered under executive functioning are the areas that specifically people with ADHD seem to also find themselves with a deficit or an area of struggle. Do you find that also?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, we see a very, very high correlation with executive functioning linked to autism and ADHD. You know, I have read hundreds, if not thousands, of neuropsychs. I don't think I have ever seen a neuropsych linked to ADHD that does not recommend executive functioning support as well. You know, having said that, I think it's important to also recognize that executive functioning is actually a comorbid with a lot of other learning challenges as well. You know, we see them with dyslexia, we see it with dysgraphia, we see it with a lot of other challenges. It's almost kind of like that thing in the Venn diagram that ties everything together.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I've done a couple of executive functioning workshop series with different people who have really been, you know, trying to help families understand executive functioning. And the one that I've done the most frequently, the gentleman, his name is Seth. He always asks, you know, what is your definition of executive functioning? And basically for me, it's what drives everything. You know, we can't function without our executive functions. And so do you kind of want to give a more detailed, you kind of did in your intro a little bit, but do you want to give a more detailed explanation of why executive function matters now and exactly what it is?
Sure. So like you said, there's a lot of different ways that executive functioning is defined in the literature. The way I like to describe it is that when we think about executive functioning, it's really a set of cognitive skills that allows us to manage ourselves in order to achieve a goal. Right? So it's how we plan, it's how we set goals, it's how we organize, start tasks, stay focused, regulate emotions, follow through to completion. And so really the way I like to think about executive functioning is that it's that bridge that turns intention into action. There's this really nice definition that I like to use from Dr. Naglieri, who's one of the leading researchers in executive functioning. And so he'll talk about executive functioning as self-management skills. But the definition that he uses is that executive functioning is really about how you do what you decide to do. And I think that's a really nice way that like ties it together for me.
Yeah, I really like that. And who did you say that was through again? Who
Dr. Naglieri.
Okay. All right. Not a name that I have heard, but I'm glad to know that there are, you know, lots of others out there. And I knew there were, I just hadn't heard that name before.
Yeah, there's so much now in the research world about this.
Yeah, there is. And so what is Axiom's approach to executive functioning?
Yeah. So the way that we think about executive functioning at Axiom Learning is that we use what we call the PICKLE framework. And so the PICKLE framework essentially breaks executive functioning down into four key skill categories. So it breaks it down into planning, initiation, completion, and learning. And so we essentially say that these four steps are the core steps behind every single task that we do each day, big or small. You know, so even something like coming to this podcast today, we will always kind of go through these four steps. You know, so planning would be things like thinking about, okay, what is it that I might want to kind of be talking about? You know, what is it that I need to do in order to make this happen? You know, maybe I want to kind of reread my notes. Maybe I need to kind of block off time in my schedule. Initiation is really about getting the materials that I need together, right? For example, I might want to make sure I have a charger for my laptop, that I have water on hand. Completion then would be actually doing the podcast, and learning would be then kind of reflecting on that experience so that next time, and there's a similar experience, I might adapt based on what I know. And so every single step that we do in life always goes through these four steps, right? We plan, we initiate, we complete, and we learn.
Yeah, I like that, the pickle. And so for the parent who might be listening, what they look for at home with their child to say, oh, okay, they're doing great. Their executive functioning is developing, you know, kind of on target. And what might the parent who is like, ugh, I'm not sure, what should they be looking for?
Yeah. So, you know, Pickle Framework provides a really nice way to actually break down and think about, like, where might that breakdown in executive functioning be happening? You know, because we can actually be seeing the same behavior, but there might be a lot of different reasons for that, right? So, for example, you might see your child who's not turning in their homework. That's a really common behavior we see, right? And so you can kind of use that Pickle Framework to kind of start to ask yourself where that breakdown is happening. Is it happening at the planning phase in that maybe they don't know what they need to do, right? They're just unsure, like, what is actually being asked of them. Is it happening at the initiation phase where they just really cannot get started, right? It might look like procrastination, where they really just can't seem to take that first step to do the work. Maybe the breakdown is happening at the completion phase, which is like they're actually getting started, they're doing some of the homework, but they maybe are getting frustrated partway through doing that homework and they're not actually able to actually finish that homework. Maybe they are doing the homework but not turning it in. That's a really common one we've seen with students, right? They just don't press that final like turn in button on Google Classroom. Or maybe that breakdown is happening at the learning phase, right? Where they're just kind of doing the homework, but you're kind of seeing the same mistakes happening like over and over again, right? There's no error analysis of learning from past errors, right? And so I think actually taking that Pickle Framework is going to be really helpful in thinking through like why something is happening.
Yeah. And so that was for the parent to look for at home. What kind of comments do you get from teachers when they're saying, you know, they're repeating certain comments like, yeah, they can't turn in their homework. That is absolutely one of the biggest ones that I find frequently throughout my IEP coaching is, well, this kid just can't turn in the homework. And so before I started to ask my next question, but before I get into that, so what kinds of things when a teacher says over and over to themselves about a student, what should be those triggers for them to go, oh, maybe I need to look at something. Maybe this isn't a discipline thing or a lazy thing or a not want to thing.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, generally when we talk about behaviors or especially challenging behaviors, the framework that we like to follow is that one should always ask themselves two questions. The first question is why, and that second question is why now, right? So why is what might be happening under the surface, and that why now is, you know, is it something about that specific situation? Is it something, is it, you know, is it in a specific like subject that they're never turning in the homework? Is it a specific type of assignment? So really just actually pausing to ask themselves that question is a really nice first step. To do, to even just be starting to think about that more critically. And again, just, you know, as a teacher, you can kind of take that same framework and ask yourselves the same question, right? You know, does the student actually fully understand the expectations of the assignment? You know, would they be able to know what an example looks like? You know, am I seeing them being able to get started? Are they requiring lots of prompting for me to get started? You know, am I seeing like work that's kind of half done? And so just kind of, again, just breaking it down and just asking themselves that question. And, you know, even what we found really successful is actually just talking to students about the Pickle process, right? Making it really explicit for students. A lot of these executive functioning skills and these expectations that we have for students are just implicit expectations that we just kind of expect that students will do. And so when we actually give them a really explicit framework to follow, that gives them a much more clear schema as to kind of what I should be doing and how I should be doing it. And so talking to them about this, talking to them about the different sub-skills that would fall under each of these Pickle skills, and even just asking them like, hey, what do you think you're good at? What are your strengths? What are the challenges for you? You know, where are the areas that you think you struggle the most? And actually having that conversation with them can be really helpful.
Yeah. And I have to be honest, I get really frustrated with teachers. And I am a teacher. So I definitely struggled with this for sure when I was teaching full time, but definitely now as an IEP coach, when I go in and I just hear these teachers say, well, they could do it if they tried. Yeah. Or, you know, they did this skill yesterday, but now today they don't have it. So can you sort of give like a little bit of a breakdown of how executive functioning skills develop in students and like kind of general ages maybe? For each one?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing I will say before we go into the ages is that one of the most important things to really think about when it comes to executive functioning is that executive functioning is a state-dependent skill. So what I mean by that is that executive functioning is part of the higher order thinking skills. They're primarily located in our prefrontal cortex. And so essentially what happens is that before we can even access executive functioning skills, our body asks itself this very, very simple question, which is, am I safe right now? Right. And like that doesn't just mean physical safety, but it also means like, am I in a high stress environment? Am I in a high anxiety environment? Do I feel like I don't really belong in this environment? And if any of those conditions are present, that prefrontal cortex is not even online, right? The body kind of shuts it down and says, if I'm not feeling safe right now, I need to just kind of focus on that. And that just comes from an evolutionary background. If I'm sensing any kind of fear, those skills are not online, right? And that really kind of can explain this phenomenon, right? Where you can see students who are able to do things one day and the next day they're not able to do those things. And it's not because those skills disappeared or reappeared overnight. It's because that prefrontal cortex is not online. And that's kind of the biggest thing to really understand about executive functioning skills.
Yes, that, oh my gosh, absolutely. You're preaching to the choir here. Because I say that all the time too, like when I'm doing professional development with teachers or when I'm talking with parents, we have to be as relaxed as possible. We have to feel comfortable. I love the safe word. Because like the way it was explained to me years ago, and I can never remember the parts of the brain, but I know that basically, emotions kind of are back here and the logical education learning stuff is up here. And that stuff has to go through that emotional part to get to the educational part. And if the emotions are wound up for whatever reason, then it's just not going to work as well for us to be able to teach those kids and for those kids to be able to understand. So I just want to say hello to, I think it's HR officials. I'm not, I think that's what that says. So thank you for joining us and for putting into the chat that you're joining us today. And so, yeah, that how can we help our student, whether they're at home? Or, I mean, I know your programs are specifically designed for school settings. So, how can we help our students be as much in that state of being online? I like how you phrase that, online and ready to learn.
So, I mean, the first thing I would say is to not assume that students are coming into the classroom or into the homeroom setting in a ready-to-learn state, right? Oftentimes, we just kind of assume, like, okay, students walked in, like, let's get on with it. Let's get on with our learning and kind of recognizing that a lot of our students, and this is going to be especially true for students who, might come from kind of more disadvantaged situations, right? Students who have experienced like greater trauma, whether that's like big T or little T trauma, that they might have experienced. And so the framework that we use at Axiom, really love our frameworks, is we use the CARE framework, and CARE stands for Connect, Activate, Reason, Elevate. And so it's just a simple four-step progression. And essentially we say, look, anytime that you're trying to kind of engage higher order thinking skills, which you're going to be pretty much doing anytime in the classroom when you're requiring executive functioning or academic skills, you want to kind of make sure you're going through this progression with students. And so the first step of that is just connecting, right? Actually explicitly taking the time to connect with students. And that's really just really about sending signals of safety to their brain. That could be through like an icebreaker activity, a regulation activity. It doesn't have to be long, right? Oftentimes, it can really be like 1 or 2 minutes. The second step we talk about is activate. And activate is really about how do we get the brain into just the just right state of learning. So what we know about the brain is that we want the brain to kind of be under the just right amount of stress for learning. That means that you don't want students who are like sleepy, like lying on that desk, right? Like that's too relaxed and not going to be kind of in that optimal state of learning. Conversely, you don't want students who are going to be really anxious, or kind of a really hype state, right? Like that brain is not going to be kind of conducive for learning, but you do want them to have that just right level of engagement. And that's why we see that stress is not actually always a bad thing. You know, we tend to talk about stress as a really negative thing, but actually having the just right amount of stress is really what is going to kind of enable that just right amount of arousal for learning. So that's really the activating parts. And then the reason is really where we start to talk about the executive functioning. And that will be really about like, how do we provide, you know, explicit schemas for students so that when we get to the elevate portion, which is really about our academic learning, students already have a schema in which they're able to actually embed that information that's coming in.
Wow, that was a lot. It is so important. And I think a lot of what you were talking about is what me as a layperson would say is kind of having a relationship with the student, knowing a little bit about the student's background, knowing a little bit about their family life. When I say that, I often get, or I get eye rolls, but I'm not saying you have to go to their sporting events all the time, or you have to spend a lot of money on the student. It's acknowledging that the student is a person, that you let that student know that you care about them. Like you talked about earlier, that safety, kids can pick it up. They know if teachers like having them in their classes or if they don't like having them in their classes. In Raymond's chapter of my book, he talks about that a lot, that he definitely had a sense of which teachers not only liked him, but liked teaching and liked the whole concept of teaching. And he said, and there were some teachers who just didn't seem like they really even were happy in general, didn't like teaching. And then I just became another burden because I needed some extra help.
Yeah.
And
this idea of like, as a teacher, as an educator, or as a parent, right? Like the state that you're in, right? Whatever you're feeling about a situation, like our students will really be able to actually sense that, even if we're not saying anything, we're not doing anything. Right. You know, we think we're kind of doing everything right. And what's really interesting is that they found is that that is actually especially true of our students with learning challenges, right? So especially our students with autism and ADHD, the time that we use is like neuroception, right? That like neuroceptively, they are able to pick up on other people's states so emphatically that it will really kind of impact their ability to be present in a situation, to feel safe if someone's not emitting those signals of safety to them.
Right. And it's not that they're intentionally withdrawing the student, that the student is intentionally withdrawing or trying to, say, well, you don't like me, so I'm not going to give my best effort in here. It's just how the brain talks to the body and just like, it's a defensive mechanism. Like I'm not wanted here. And so I'm not able to put out the effort because it seems like no matter what I do, the teacher still isn't going to like me, or my parent isn't going to be happy with me, or my friends are going to think whatever it is, being able to have that sense of I'm valued. For me, exactly as I am. And I don't know if it's because I'm wired for special education and so therefore I'm wired differently, but I don't understand why that's such a struggle for some teachers. And I know there's nothing you can, you don't have the answer for that, but it's...
I do fundamentally think it does come down to kind of like regulation, right? We kind of talk about it as like, the very, very bottom of like the tree. If you think about learning as a tree, we think about that as like the very bottom step, right? But just as the teacher, like, am I able to come into the classroom in like a fully regulated state, right? Am I able to kind of take care of like what my body needs, what my brain needs, such that when I'm in my classroom, I'm going to be able to be fully present for my students, and that's a lot of things that are going to impact my ability to do that, like both internal and external things happening. But I think, we talk about this a lot, right? Like we always talk about like teaching students regulation skills and how it's super important to build that. SEL is obviously receiving a lot more funding nowadays. But fundamentally, a lot of it is just about like actually building that in our teachers first and foremost, so that they have the ability to kind of enter that classroom in that regulated state.
Yes, thank you so much for saying that, because I think we often, and I know it sounded like I was saying that too, that we don't focus on the teacher's needs. And, you know, just like any student that walks into the classroom, our teachers have lives outside of their classrooms. And if they're dealing with something, try as they might, they aren't going to be able to completely leave it at the door when they walk in. And, you know, if they're struggling, if they're hungry, I mean, I think that's one of the things that I like to focus on, because everybody seems to remember the Hangry commercials from the Snickers company, you know, that, yeah, if you're hungry, you're probably going to be a little more irritable until you get your stomach full. If you're tired, you know, so I'm glad you brought that up, that we're not just talking about kids when we're talking about executive functioning. It's every single person. It's myself. It's you. It's everybody that we're interacting with every minute of the day. We don't know and I appreciate what you said earlier about it's the state that will kind of enhance or dehance an executive functioning skill in that moment. Because, yeah, any of it, like here in the Midwest and across a lot of the country, we're all dealing with being stuck in our houses for a couple of days because of snow and cold and ice, you know, so that affects a person. And so just remembering that everybody is at a different level, you know, they're anywhere from, I don't know, how many executive functions does your company say there are?
So we don't limit it at a specific number. I mean, okay. We talk about it as like the four categories. That's kind of really what we group it into. And you know, I laugh at that because I know like some frameworks break it down into many as different, like as like 80 plus different sub skills. So there's a lot, you know, and I think as executive functioning research expands, there's a lot of things now that weren't necessarily considered executive functioning in the past that are now being considered a lot more executive functioning. And a lot of that is a lot more on the emotional regulation front, right? There's a lot more research that's kind of coming out that's saying like, hey, these aren't actually as different as we previously thought they were. And that's really a key component of it. So okay. Like I said, typically we talk about like those four main categories, and under each category, we kind of have like a big subset of skills that could live under that.
Yeah. And so just thinking about that, like you said, you know, there are some that are up to 80 now. I've not heard anywhere close to that number. The highest I think I had heard them broken down into was, I think, 14 or 15. So just think about that. Everybody is at a different stage because you don't develop anything all at the same time.
Right.
You know, everything grows. And with executive functioning skills, the last that I heard was they're saying around age 25, most things for most of the population, as far as executive functioning, are developed at that point. But we can still tweak them and we can still grow a little bit more. Is that the latest science research that you're aware of?
Yeah, that's correct, right? So like 25, 26 is kind of what we're hearing in terms of like the brain still developing. You know, when we talk to people about it, we kind of often give the anecdote that like, you know, if you've ever tried to kind of rent a car as a minor, yes. Generally a lot of car companies, if you're under 25, are going to charge an additional fee for you. And that's because that's really linked to that executive functioning research that your brain has just not developed as much. And those executive functioning skills are really going to impact your ability to drive, right? You're talking about skills like response inhibition, for example, right? That are just really going to kind of impact your judgment. And, you know, not to say that you can have good executive functioning, but your brain is just not as developed as someone who's going to be 25. And after that, to your point, you know, it is kind of a gradual decline, unfortunately, though there's kind of a lot that we can be doing still to keep those skills strong.
Yeah. And I think of that often, you know, that you can rent a hotel room, you can join the military, you can alcohol, you know, you can drive, all things before age 25, but yet renting a car, somebody did research before they came up with that number, that age, and said, yeah, no, you're not at your best typically. Yeah. You know, and I don't think we as the general consumer think about how much research companies do before they set their parameters on things. Yeah.
And I think so it's interesting to a point, right? Like this, like research for executive functioning has been around for decades. At this point, coming really close to kind of two decades, and right, it's really just kind of starting to become a buzzword in our schools and our districts in the past few years. Which is great that you know people are finally starting to really pay attention to this. It's right. Unfortunate that we've known about this for that long, and that it's kind of taken this long. But we do kind of see that, you know, we do know that research does show that, like, it is about 15 years between the time that new research comes out and the time we're really able to implement it into schools. But it's fascinating right. that, like, in other businesses, you know, like car rentals, like they've been able to take that research and implement it decades ago.
Right, and yeah, they don't share what that research was. It's just like, nope, we have our research and this is the age that we've decided or why we've decided. And it's kind of like the government and speed limit signs. I talk about the fact that, you know, in a school zone, you have more frequent schools speed limit signs because they're telling you like, this is super important. We need to remind you, you have to go slow. And here's, you know, we give you flashing lights in some places. And that's because people have researched, like, if you change an expectation of, you know, the speed limit is 30 and now you can only go 20 or 15, we need to tell you that the expectation is changing and we're going to remind you frequently. But when you're out on a highway or an interstate, you don't have that many speed limit signs because, well, you're doing 55 or 60 or 70 or whatever the speed limit is. It's not a lot of danger. You're not possibly going to have kids running at you or coming out, you know, and so you don't get as many reminders of what the speed limit is.
Yeah.
And again, it's somebody did the research, but they didn't share the results of that research with the rest of us. And so we just go, okay, they just picked these random numbers and why they put these signs up. And, you know, it's only people like yourself and me who are curious, like, why did they do that? You know, or we're trying to understand behaviors. And so we look into those things. And so I want to bring up your website. And I want you to, if you can, give us a little demonstration of what exactly you all do to determine if someone has deficits in these areas, and then what programs you might direct them to. Is now a good time to do that?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to put that up here, take us out because people don't need to see us while we're talking about it.
Sure, no problem. So this is just an example teacher dashboard I have on here. So you'll notice we have a bunch of classes and a lot of curricula kind of enabled just because it's a nice way for us to kind of be able to demo everything. You know, what we do is we offer both assessment and curricula, like I said, in addition to kind of the professional learning centered around those. In terms of the assessment, one of the first things that we like to do is to have teachers and students and parents, if possible, take a questionnaire just to kind of answer some questions about different skill sets that they're doing. I will show you an example one for student. For example, student we have here, you'll see this is already filled out. But we just ask, again, these questions that are really about these underlying skills. So here are a lot of these kinds of questions asking about things that would be more so sensory motor skills. You know, as the questionnaire progresses, we kind of ask things that are a lot more about cognitive processing skills. And again, these are typically not questions that you would think to ask when it comes to an academic setting, right? But they're really important, right? Is this a student who is fidgeting a lot? Is this a student who has a lot of trouble modulating their voice volume? And these are really, really important clues that tell us like what might be happening under the surface in terms of the student's underlying learning skills that we might want to be addressing. You know, these students who will often just tune out and daydream, who might have difficulty putting thoughts and ideas into words. Again, these are going to give us really important clues about what might be happening. And then we'll ask, you know, in terms of executive functioning skills, we ask kind of questions. You know, you can see ones around like organization, right? Like, do they have trouble keeping things tidy? But also a wide range of executive functioning skills, right? Like we ask about like frustration tolerance. You know, we'll ask about like transitions. We'll ask about task initiation. So a wide range of these skills. And again, these are questions that we ask of teachers, of students, of parents. And what I think is really nice is that there's kind of flexibility in how many audiences are answering these questions. So for example, you could have scenarios in which it's just students who are answering these questions. And we have a lot of districts who kind of are just doing it as a screener for all of their students now, just because it's a really nice way to just kind of start the school year and reflect on it as they go. But we have, you know, in some cases, especially when it comes to more so of like an MTSS referral conversation, then that's a really nice scenario in which like the parents and the teachers kind of get involved and potentially answer this as well. So there is that flexibility here.
Awesome. Yeah.
I'll show you. And so, you know, the general gist, I'll open an example report for the students. Once this gets submitted, we essentially have like a report that gets auto-generated. And the goal here is really just to show relative strengths and areas of growth for a student, right? So you're able to kind of see like where a student generally is, what is going to be a challenge versus just a concern. And we'll give essentially the top three skills to work on, again, based on these questionnaire results. And in terms of this teacher piece of it, we'll also just give like really actionable steps that they can be taking. You know, and the goal here is to just give like a very easy steps that I can implement in my classroom straight away, right? Like things like, okay, if my student struggles with like processing speed, I'm going to set a maximum time for assignments at home, right? I'm going to shorten repetitive assignments by having the student do every other problem. You know, oftentimes these might kind of seem like tips that I mention that might feel obvious to some educators, but actually just having it listed as an explicit recommendation for a student really takes that guessing work out of it for educators.
Yeah. And our educators, again, I am one, I've not been in the classroom for a few years, but they are so overwhelmed. We have more and more teachers leaving the education field and fewer and fewer coming in. And so more and more things keep getting added to the teacher's plate. And, you know, again, me having sort of a brain wired for special education, I tend to think of those things as accommodations, but I don't know that general education teachers or, you know, again, people who are just, you know, they have 75 students on their caseload and they're trying to come up with what works. So for you to just give that to them so they don't have to try to figure that out is phenomenal.
Yeah. And thinking about it, you know, this is when we think about executive functioning, right? This is not just something that is like specific to the special education. Well, this is something, right, that all of our students struggle with and that all of our students benefit from, right? And so a lot of this is thinking, like, to your point, potentially our special educators are trained in this, but how do you relay this to general education teachers in a way that they can use it? You know, typically when we think about executive functioning and the MTSS framework, we say that, like, look at the tier one level, the general education teachers need to be supporting executive functioning skills. At the tier two level, we're really talking about scaffolding. And at the tier three level, that's really when we talk about strengthening. But those things need to be kind of coexisting. And those general education teachers, you know, have just as much of a role in terms of being able to kind of understand and implement these scaffolds.
Yes. And I think that's so important to share that, you know, this is a team effort. It also is not only applying to students who have a Section 504 plan or an IEP. I mean, these are things that everyone will be able to benefit from because everyone is developing their executive functioning skills while they're going through school. What do you say, or have you ever had any teachers or school districts say, we don't have time to do another thing in our curriculum? How do you help them understand how this helps them?
Yeah, we have definitely been in that situation. You know, I think we kind of right now we're a little bit in this no man's land where on the one hand, there's this growing recognition from districts, from educators, from parents, that our students really, really need executive functioning support. And there's also not space and time that's being carved out in districts for students to receive that executive functioning support. And again, that's going to be especially true, right, at more so the tier one, tier two levels, right? And so there's this question of like, okay, we know this thing is really important. We know this is going to be really impactful for students. We know there's tons of research that links executive functioning to academic success. And we don't have any time to do that. So when does it occur? And so part of that is definitely trying to get creative with districts in terms of helping them find when those time periods would be. You know, we have a lot of districts who are starting to implement this as part of like homeroom, who are starting to implement this as part of like independent study time. We've seen it as, you know, even implemented as part of like ELA classes. So kind of getting creative on that front. And some of it is also just kind of sharing the research with them around executive functioning. So I know we didn't necessarily talk about this earlier. I think we assume that kind of folks know this, but there is, you know, a very expansive set of research now that really shows that executive functioning skills are the single greatest predictor of success for students, right? And that's not just kind of predicting standardized
tests. Can you say that again? Just because I want to hammer home that point of how important executive functioning skills are.
Sure. Executive functioning skills are the single greatest predictor of success for students, far more so than IQ. So they don't just predict standardized test scores. They will also kind of predict things like high school graduation rates, college graduation rates. They also predict, wealth. They will also predict, you know, success at work. They also predict things like, longevity, right? Or even kind of marriage success rates as well. So they really are tied to kind of not just, we know we're not just thinking about these as classroom skills. These are really life readiness skills.
Yes. That is so, so vastly important. And I often would tell my students, especially when they would first be found eligible for special education, because the stigma that comes with it, you know, it's like, oh, I'm dumb or I'm stupid or there's something wrong with me because I need special education. So I would often tell them, you know, you have to research. One of your first assignments for the middle school or high school was you have to research people who have the same eligibility or the same disability if you actually have a medical diagnosis that you have, because there are thousands of people. I mean, I don't know that Elon Musk has been diagnosed with something, but he definitely seems on the spectrum to me. That was my worst score on my state testing was, you know, understanding all the characteristics of the different things. But you look at Richard Branson, he is the Virgin Airlines owner. Whoopi Goldberg has ADHD. These people were not super successful in school. But their executive functioning skills were very developed and developed enough that they could problem solve. They could think outside the box. They could, so I really appreciate that statement that more than IQ, executive functioning skills are the greatest predictor of success. And I don't think that is said often enough or believed. Maybe it's said often enough, but maybe it's just not believed yet. Right. Because I can hear people saying this to me actually, like, well, we didn't have all these problems when I went to school back in the 1900s, like myself, you know, somebody who's my age. So is there any, or do you have your own opinion of what was happening then that maybe isn't happening now?
Yeah.
Or what didn't happen then that is happening now?
Absolutely. You know, so I think executive functioning skills are interesting because oftentimes what you'll hear when you talk to educators or to parents, right, is they might say things like, you know, well, my student, like this year, they're really struggling, but like this was never something they struggled with before. Like, you know, all of a sudden they started struggling with XYZ thing. Right. And so you see that, right. You see this kind of phenomenon, right, where traditionally you have students who didn't seem like they had any executive functioning challenges, who all of a sudden develop these executive functioning skill challenges. And what's actually really happening is that, you know, as learners, we all have a lot of strengths and we all have a lot of areas for growth. And so what we naturally do is that we use our strengths to compensate for areas of growth. And so we have to kind of be cognizant of like, what is the demands of the situation around me? And to what extent can I actually be able to then use those strengths to compensate? And so oftentimes what we see is that, and this will happen especially at like transition points, right? Like the elementary to middle school, the middle to high school, the high school to college, the first job, the first child, you know, the first marriage, right? Like these are kind of really key transition points that we see where executive functioning challenges will like suddenly emerge, right? And it's not that they weren't present before. It's more just that we were able to actually use our strengths to compensate for the demands of a situation. So for example, you might have a student who maybe they're in elementary school and they never remember that they have like homework to do that they need to turn in, but actually they have like, they're a really quick thinker. They have really good processing speed and working memory such that when the teacher is starting to like collect the homework, they're like the student who can kind of just fill out that worksheet really quickly. The teacher like collects it, right? And so no one kind of identifies that that's really a challenge until they start to get to middle school. And all of a sudden those assignments a lot more demanding and they can't just get away with doing it the morning of. And so you kind of see this phenomenon that's really linked to me in terms of why we see so many executive functioning challenges is just because we live in a world where the executive functioning demands that we're putting on ourselves, our students are just so, so much greater, right, than they were in the 1900s. We live right in a world where there's kind of a lot of like information overload, you know, where there's just a lot of, you know, access to like distractions everywhere, and the demands that that's placing on our students are just so much greater than they were before.
Yeah, I often in my understanding behaviors or my shattering limiting beliefs workshops will say the latest research that I saw is that we, every single person on the planet, does not matter the age, process 74 gigabytes of information daily. And that is as much information as if you were to watch 16 movies in a day. And I mean, if you think about that, if a movie, and most movies are longer than an hour and a half, but that's 24 hours that it would take you to watch 16 movies. If they're 2 hours or longer, it's not even physically possible to watch that much in a 24-hour period. But yet, every single one of us processes that amount of information every day. And our students don't have the capacity to know what to do with it all. So their brain just sort of naturally dumps a lot of it because it doesn't know what do I need to focus on. And so, yeah, it's not so much that a child is different today than when I went to school. It's society around the child that is causing these problems.
Yeah, just the demands, right, on our cognitive skills and our executive functioning is so much greater today than they were even just like 10 years ago.
Right. Yeah, it's just absolutely crazy. I kind of cut you off from sharing on things on the website. So do we need to go back? Is there more?
There is a lot more I can share if we go back, but happy to go in any conversation that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I would like you to share because, as I said before, this is more for school systems and educators, but the parents that are watching, you can bring this program to your schools and say, you know, what sort of assessment are you doing on our children that, you know, as far as their executive functioning skills are concerned? And just quickly, how long does it take to do this assessment? Is this like a, you know, when I think about assessments for special education, they're normally an hour to 2 hours and have to be done over multiple days. What is the length time frame for this assessment?
Yes. So what we're finding is for students, this is really taking 5 to 10 minutes.
That's incredible.
It's a quick, and it's, you know, and like I said, it was specifically developed. This is something that used to be a lot longer that we've kind of narrowed down over the years as we've been able to get to it. But it really kind of, we wanted to be able to address that challenge. Like you said, like typically this is information that you're only getting if you're completing a neuropsych, right? Neuropsychs take a long time first off to complete, yes. Right? They take a long time to get your results. Those wait lists are really long unless you get private. And they're very expensive if you decide that you need kind of 5-star answers. Right. And so we wanted to kind of provide a way to say, like, how are we going to be able to provide a snapshot of these skills to folks, right? A lot of these skills are assessed kind of on a questionnaire basis, already, right? Like there's a lot more that you can do if you really want to go a lot more in depth to these skills, but just thinking about like, how can we actually provide that snapshot for folks such that this is actually going to be accessible to a lot more people, you know, and it doesn't replace a neuropsych, right? This is never going to give a student a diagnosis, right? That is certainly not our intention, right. But it really is just about thinking, how can we actually provide really quick, actionable recommendations that not just like teachers can do, but we also have them at the parent and student facing level as well.
That's amazing. Okay. So I'm going to hush and let you talk some more about the website because we only have about 10 minutes to go. So
we have a quick snapshot. So I'll just show quickly, because I mentioned this, everything we talked about, we also have a parent facing report for this, right? And I think this is, again, this is really part of our effort to think about how can we bring parents into what we're doing so that parents are able to kind of support those executive functioning skills at home as well. And so they'll, you know, it'll look similar, but those recommendations will be really different. And a lot of what we might focus on will be things like, how do we actually provide like game recommendations that they can use, right? Like recommending, okay, if your student is struggling in processing speed, these are specific games that you can play at home, right? Or if they're struggling with working memory, right? Like tic-tac-toe, Battleship, et cetera, right? Like just recommending those games for parents so that they can easily be doing them at home. Similarly, we have this at a student level as well. So you'll notice at the student level, we just remove any kind of red, yellow, green reference. You know, every single student will get 3 strengths and 3 areas of growth. And what I think is really neat about this is, again, just kind of giving students agency and really just kind of allowing them to kind of understand what is my learning profile and what can I actually do about it. Because I do think a lot of our students, especially our students in special education, tend to be really, really passive recipients of a lot of assessments and a lot of interventions without actually understanding why they're doing something. And so I think that piece is really important to us to be able to kind of help students understand, this is what's happening in my brain and here are some recommendations. And like my role as a student is to kind of be a self-scientist, right, to try it out and see what works for me or what doesn't work for me as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love that because it does take some, I know I said I wasn't going to talk, but it does take some of the learning responsibility off of the teacher and off of the parent, and does then give that student that, like you said, that autonomy of, okay, I'm going to own this about myself. You know, it's not that I'm lazy. It's not that I'm not trying. I am trying and I am putting in a lot of effort. And now I have a reason why some of these things are difficult for me more so than something else. And so now I can start to address that and I can start to do some of these things. So I love that, you know, goes over to the student at some point because parents and teachers already feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, for sure. You know, what I'll show as well is that what we also have at the teacher level is we, like I said, you know, we do kind of have a specific curricula that teaches executive functioning skills. And so at the teacher level, we will actually just link the assessment to the curricula in terms of providing really specific recommendations to say like, okay, based on these areas of growth, here's kind of where we recommend kind of starting with this as well. And so they can kind of click through directly into those lessons.
That's awesome.
You know, so beyond kind of the assessment, I'll show an example of a program, but essentially what we do is we provide like really specific curricula. Because a lot of times we get asked, you know, okay, these are really great. Like, how do I actually teach these executive functioning skills? How do I know that I'm teaching them in an effective way? How do I know which skills I should be working on given a specific grade? I know that was kind of part of the question earlier about like what is important at any kind of at a child's development. What are the specific skills that I should be teaching given that grade level? And so that's something that we've really kind of been able to break down, right? So like at the 6th grade, this is kind of an example of just different skills. You know, we talk a lot about like, okay, you know, it's my first time to middle school. So how do I know where I'm supposed to be? How do I figure out my schedule? Backpack organization is really big at 6th grade. We really kind of focus on establishing the systems for that. We talk to them about how they can kind of start to strengthen their self-advocacy, what it means to kind of figure out like who's on your team, who can help you, how to set goals, you know, and we give them some key study skills like deciphering instructions, right? Like all of these are really key components of what we do at 6th grade. And just to kind of give an idea, when we teach a skill with students, essentially what we're doing is every single skill that we teach, we always kind of have four lessons that teach the skill. And so that first lesson is typically really always focused on why the skill matters, right? So just kind of getting that student's buy-in is really, really key. So just kind of understanding why we're talking about this. In the second lesson, we typically will always just introduce a strategy to that student. And so again, this is really going back to what we were saying. It's really about just taking something that's implicit and making it super explicit for students, right? So instead of saying, hey, if you're feeling stuck, you just need to ask for help. We actually want to like teach them a strategy for like, how do you do that? The specific one that we talk about is TAPIN. I'll give you an example here, but essentially TAPIN means we give them an acronym, right? So we tell them you identify the task, then you choose your ally, and then you actually plan your ask. And we actually give them a really clear schema, right? We tell them, you say, I'm working on dot, dot, dot. I need help with, and it would help if you could. And so again, the idea here is to just give them a really, really clear strategy and schema that they can follow so that we're not just telling them to do more of something, but just how to do it.
Right.
So then the third lesson, they practice applying it. And the fourth lesson is really about that transference piece. But again, the really key part here being that like, these are not just kind of one and done strategies. These are things that we have to introduce, reinforce, and just really build into habits until students are kind of comfortable using it in different scenarios.
Yes. Awesome. So I'm going to take the website out because we just have a couple minutes left and I want to wrap up. So one of the things that I have found a lot lately is, and I think we touched on this, but I don't think you gave the exact amount. So interventions, which this is, can come under, have to be research-based and scientifically proven. So you've said it, you know, that there's lots of studies out there, but what sort of research and scientific proven strategies, or not strategies, but information, do you have to say, yep, this is, you can absolutely, this falls under the, you know, Education Act, not No Child Left Behind, but ESSA. Can you answer that?
So our specific programs and assessment are based off of more than 250,000 hours of research at this point. So there is a lot of backing behind kind of what we're doing, right? That's not just kind of what the literature is saying about it, but we also do look at it in practice, right? Like, okay, mm-hmm. when we actually implement this in the school district, like how do we measure the impact of this, yes. right? And so we measure impact, not just in terms of executive functioning skills, because I mean, those are important, but fundamentally what's really important is just what are they transferring over to? And so what's really important to us, right, is to be able to see, okay, how are these actually impacting standardized test scores? You know, when students strengthen these and actually focus on these, we see actually a huge rise in standardized test scores. And then we also focus on looking at other metrics, such as behavior and attendance data, right? So when school starts to feel easier for a student, they're going to kind of have higher attendance rates. So we do see a decrease in unauthorized absences. And we do also see a decrease in behavioral incidents. And so whenever we partner with a district, those are going to be kind of metrics that we're looking at to make sure that the program is going to be kind of successful and having the outcomes that we want it to generate.
Awesome. Yeah, because that's a tough thing to do is finding research-based, scientifically proven interventions. And one last question, and then we do have to wrap up. Executive functioning as an equity issue, like, can you address that just really quick, if that's possible?
It's possible to address it quickly, but I will certainly do my best. So this really goes back to students being in a ready to learn state. And so what I mean by that, right, is that, again, when we have students coming into a classroom, you are going to have students who are going to be in more of a less of a ready to learn state. And a lot of that is going to depend on kind of home environments and home backgrounds, right? And so when we talk about taking the time to actually like connect with students and kind of teach these executive functioning skills, we're really talking about kind of getting students in that ready to learn state and understanding that not all students are coming into the classroom in that same state and that they're not all going to be in that ready to learn state. And so really taking the time means that we're giving much more equitable access to students to be able to process and interact with the academic content that we ultimately want them to be able to interact with.
Awesome. Thank you for that. So you've got like 30 seconds. Do you have any last words of advice, suggestions? I have put up the website, and Hannah's email is hbroido@axiomlearning.com. And Axiom is AXIOM. And that is the website as well. Axiom. Oops, I pulled up. Yeah, there it goes across the bottom. Okay. AxiomLearning.com. So, yep, you got 30 seconds. If there's anything
else. Last words of advice is that executive functioning skills are the single greatest predictor of success for later in life. I know we emphasize that, but we really cannot emphasize that enough. And that these are skills that we really have to explicitly teach to students. We can't expect and wait for students to implicitly pick up on these. And so we have to actually explicitly break this down for students to be able, for them to be able to kind of land these.
Awesome. Thank you for being my guest today. And remember, everybody, we know who we are, but not who we will be. Be sure to like and subscribe and hit that notification button so you don't miss any of my amazing guests. I'll see you next time.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.